Blog Talk Radio.
You have made it to Stu and the Nun, an online radio show that looks to inform, educate, and hopefully make you laugh. Stu and the Nun is a show focused on national security, policy, politics, and selfless service. We do this by not only interviewing guests, but also sharing our perspectives and asking you, the listener, to interact with us on our show chat room, via our Facebook page, and on Twitter.
Everybody, this is the Nun, and you have reached Stu and the Nun. Unfortunately, tonight, or lucky for you tonight, depending on how you want to look at it, the Stu is not here, but we have the best designated hitter in the radio business. We got the famous Tom Amenta of the movie Range 15 joining us tonight, as well as a consultant and a political analyst among the many hats that he wears, as well as student and all-around awesome former Ranger. Tom, thank you for joining us tonight.
Dude, I need to hire you as my hype man. That was the best intro. A political analyst, I like that. I'm going to put that on the next business card that we have going on. How you doing, brother? I really thought you were going to say, like, you got the best alternate bald guy to fill in for Stu. So,
well, you know, like, well, you know, that's almost a requirement to co-host on the show, a friend of yours, and you know, Kelly Krieger, he's also like guest hosted on here. You know, his hair is sparing.
Yeah.
You know, mine is sparing. Troy's is sparing. You and I are balder by choice than by actual design at this part in time in life. But
yep.
But that's good. But we're glad you're here, man.
Thanks,
I was a hype man. I was on tour with Britney, but not Spears, and, you know, apparently I was just too powerful. You know, I got the crowds too riled up, so I had to, like, tone down my hype-ness.
But, man,
so we got a good show. We got a great guest tonight. I'll introduce our guest in a few moments. He's in the virtual green room, you know, tuning in to a cocktail right now. But tell us what you got going on. Now, we haven't... it's been about 2.5 months since you've been on the show. You were on as a guest. We told you you were welcome to come back. We meant it. That's why we brought you back as a large and in charge co-host. And so tell us what's going on in the life of Tom.
So so for Range 15, give everyone an update. I know that most people are like, I care what else this schmuck's doing, but let me hear about that movie. We've wrapped it to what you call like the picture edit. So I hope I got that term right. Someone in the show correct me. So basically what it means is that like all the editing and all the sequencing of like all the scenes and stuff, that's locked down. And what we're doing now is it's in sound and it's getting the music and the sound effects overlaid, and then it's getting colored. So like I didn't think about this until after, you know, I call like the very first rough cut in January, but like you film at different times of the day. So it was kind of funny. Like one scene was like super bright. You know what I'm saying? Like you're filming in the middle of the day, and the next day one was like kind of dark. So we're smoothing all of that out. We are going to be premiering it at the GI Film Festival in Washington, D.C. And then a little bit of a premiere tour. We got some dates at around some military bases, Fort Bragg, Fort Hood are on the list. Fort Benning's on the list, I believe. We've got like the obligatory like LA thing, which is kind of funny. So that's all going to be happening sort of May through June, and we're going to get it out there, and everything's on track. Everything's on time. It's going great, man. We're pumped up. We're super excited to make this happen.
Well, I know the folks here in the Central Texas area, outside Greater Austin. Fort Hood's not far from us, so we're really excited that you guys are coming here. You know, the show could be an absolute disaster, but I don't think that's going to be the case. We're just excited to see it and just see the I was kidding. And see the efforts of the veteran community and how the veteran community flipped Hollywood upside down and shook the change out of its pocket, literally.
Oh, yeah.
Quite. So pretty excited about that. I know you're doing some consulting. You got a couple, you know, political candidates in the back pocket now. Like, you're going to be a high roller. You start having to wear a suit.
Nah.
You know, like.
No. Well, the suit thing's true. And that, and you, my brother, since we go back so far, like, you know how much I hate a suit. So I felt like the one story that I was going to tell in all this in the intro was when, you know, Toby, for those of you who don't know, was also there the night I met my wife. It was at an event for a charity that, you know, when I was at Ranger Up, we supported and Toby was working at. And I was in a suit, but I wasn't initially supposed to go to the event, and I didn't want to actually go to the events initially just because I had to wear a suit. And now, you know, consultant is really fancy word for, like, trying to convince people that you know what you're talking about. That's really what it boils down to. Like, first I got to convince them, and then I make them pay me money to help them because I think they think I can solve their problem. It's really kind of a weird thing. Unfortunately, with everything going on, I don't know how much time we'll get to talk about it, but it's kind of a funky thing. But yeah, now, like, I've been in a suit more in the past 2 months than I had been in the past, like, 5 years. Like, no kidding. So it is a little bit of a change. But a mutual friend of ours, I'm working actually as his social media strategist and consultant. And Ricky, if you're listening, I will still have the deliverables to you tonight before I go to bed. I promise. I have not forgotten about that, which is actually funny. He emailed me about 10 minutes before the show started, you know, like following up. So they absolutely will be out tonight. You can tell everyone's campaign. They'll see that. And, you know, yeah, I'm doing that. And I'm working with a couple of startups across the country to sort of help them grow what they want to do. I'm excited, man, and, you know, just having a good time. Once again, trying to hustle, as it boils down to, which is, once again, just keep the hustle going.
Well, I tell you what, you know, there's one of the reasons I became an entrepreneur when I left, like, the regular workforce, if you will, was because I was tired of wearing suits. Although I don't mind throwing one on every now and then. But, man, like, that's such an additional cost when you talk about, like, the actual purchase, the maintenance, the rotation of shirts and ties. You know, then you get judged on your watch. You get judged on your cufflinks.
Yeah.
And, you know, nothing makes me happier than wearing a pair of brand-name cool pants and a nice, you know, vintage T-shirt with, you know, whatever I have on it, like, today I'm rocking Violence of Action, you know.
Nice.
I sit at my desk behind, you know, like a big, you know, big screen Mac and then a little screen MacBook Pro.
Mm-hmm.
I do my thing, and, you know, I enjoy it. But before we get too carried away, we'll come back to some of the stuff. But we got a great guest tonight, Tom. We got a young man. I'm calling him young, you know, but he's. That's because he's not dead, and he's still alive and kicking and doing good things. So in my mind, that makes you young. He's a young man out of Louisiana, the Shreveport area, and we actually met him through a mutual friend, a guy by the name of Mr. Rick John, last week's guest here, like a congressional candidate out of the 4th Congressional District of Louisiana. And Shay, I met him years ago when I was working with an organization called Soldiers Angels, the one that we were just talking about, Tom, and he works with the VA out there, and he's actually, you know, noticed some discrepancies, but we're going to bring him on the air here. And first, Shay, welcome to the show. How are you tonight?
Doing well, man. Thanks for having me.
Oh, well,
I don't have a suit,
like,
on, so you don't have to worry about that.
All right. Well, you know. You could say you had a suit on and be all right. Like, one of my goals, like, I really for a period of time, looked into, you know, being in broadcast on a regular basis, film broadcast. And,
right.
you know, my whole plan was to, like, figure out how I could broadcast in, like, cargo shorts and flip-flops and just, like, be, like, suited up, like, from the bottom up. And, you know, that was, like, my goal. And that was actually going to be, like, my interview shtick was going to be, like, hey, you know.
Hey, we had a cool conversation about the tie one day. He's like, who came up with the tie? I was like,
yeah, no. Well, I
anyway,
tell you,
thanks for having me
up.
On, man.
Yeah.
I appreciate it. I've been looking forward to it.
That's good. Hey, so our listening audience is pretty military friendly. So why don't we start off? And I know you're a combat medic, so why don't you tell our audience about your service, and then we'll go from there.
I kind of feel good. You call me young. Actually, I joined the military in 1992, enlisted in the Army. I was a medic and active duty and did that and did my 4-year stint and then got out, wanted to go to college. Actually worked on Johnston Island a little bit as a contractor. Paid off a few bills you get when you go in the military and get out. And went back, wanted to go to college. Went to school, was flat broke. I was basically started at 24. Went in the guard to help try to pay some bills while I was going to school and using GI Bill and basically did that and went to Bosnia and just kept going with it and working and got my degree and got my master's, got my undergrad from Auburn in social work and got into grad school, surprisingly, and did that and got my master's in social work. I always wanted to counsel veterans. And that was my thing. Wanted to provide counseling services and things, and that's what I worked on. And I knew with a clinical license in social work that I could do that. So that's what I pursued. And, you know, got to a point, I thought once I first got out of the military, I was like, man, I'm not going to do this anymore. But I did the guard thing and then did the reserves and then switched over to the officer side and, you know, changed over, deployed again to Afghanistan. I was on an embedded team in Afghanistan 2008-2009 came back and was at the VA before I actually did. Had worked my way pretty good at the VA. Started doing some counseling. I guess I specialize, if I have a specialty. I mean, people ask me that, but in treating veterans with PTSD, I'm certified in a lot of the updated evidence-based therapies and, you know, kind of moved my way up, served as assistant chief of mental health for a little bit, local recovery coordinator, which was moving the VA more towards recovery-oriented services and getting veterans back to work and you know, things like that. And so did that and kind of ran into some things, and I actually was one of the whistleblowers. I guess everybody out there is probably big listening audience, military and everything. I was one of the original whistleblowers that came forward. Interesting enough, Phoenix was the epicenter of all the whistleblowing in the VA, and it was started about April 2014, I think, is when somebody came out. Interesting enough, I had turned in the same stuff going on at our facility in Shreveport in June of 2013. So 11 months before Phoenix, I had reported it to the IG. And so
that was
never really happened. Was that?
How was that received? Like, so?
It wasn't received well.
Yeah, no, I mean, as a military guy, like, as an Army guy, you know, the IG, they're not the enemy, but they're the,
right.
Man, it's got to be really,
yeah.
really bad. Before
right.
I started like picking up that phone and you know like
well you know I've been in the military long enough where I'd had my run-ins with the IG. I mean I think all of us that have been in have. And you know
yeah,
you know
leader,
and I always
sure.
as a commander or a leader in the Army, I always told my folks, I said, hey, if you're doing what you're supposed to be doing, don't worry about them coming in here.
Yeah, right.
You know, don't worry
that's
about
the truth.
It. And you know
and if you haven't plausible deniability.
Right. But, you know, what was bad is it had gotten so frustrating. I was so frustrating because, you know, you kept going, and, you know, being in a leader and running things and, you know, joining the military so young and just having the opportunity to grow and lead, you know, I knew what needed to be done. I knew what veterans wanted. I knew a lot of different things. I'd been in that field, the medical field, since I was 18 years old. And, you know, it started getting really frustrated. And, you know, I'm fortunate. Two things I've always wanted to be was a soldier, and I wanted to counsel soldiers. And, you know, I took it really at heart, and I kept going and trying to go through the right channels. I mean, I'm an old-school military guy. You know, always keep it within and correct things within if you can. And, you know, I just kept getting hammered. You know, the people say, well, this is the way we do it in the VA. And you know, you're going to make some enemies if you do that. And you know, I finally got to a point where I'd moved my way up, and I just couldn't let it go anymore. And I said, I've got to do something. And, you know, I've been serving as assistant chief of mental health, and I tried to go through the proper channels, and it looked like we were making some headway, and then we would fall back. And, you know, finally I just had enough of it. And I said, you know, we got to get veterans the care that they need. And, you know, I can't, you know, not move forward. So I went to the IG thinking I was going to get help. And, boy, that turned out to be the total opposite. Because, you know, the VA has its own IG. And, and basically, long story short, they came after me. You know, I reported it. 10 months went by. Nothing happened. Phoenix came out. And it's funny, Rick John, who I'd met and everything, he had always asked me about the VA, and I said, you know, I'd really told him, I said, man, you know, we're really short in these areas. The care we're providing is okay, but it's not where it needs to be. And then it got to where, you know, we were just so short of providers. And he said, and he knew about me reporting it to the IG in June of 13. So when Phoenix hit, it was just interesting. And, you know, we kept talking and everything, and he's interested. He texted me one night or emailed me, or I may have texted him. And he says, man, you were telling me about this a while back. And he says, you know, when he was in a spot where he was going to D.C. and stuff and talking with Soldiers Angels, he said, man, and I could have probably done something more to help you. And he said, I just didn't realize the magnitude of what was going on and what you were saying. And you know, from the outside looking in, a lot of people don't understand the magnitude and just really how bad it is. But he said, if there's ever anything you need, you just let me know. And I said, man, I got emails where I reported that stuff and everything. I think I sent it to him. But when the IG came in and they basically put me under criminal investigation for having a wait list that was not supposed to exist, I contacted him and he was like, do what? And he said, well, you're not talking to them anymore. And he really helped me out. I'll tell you, long story short on that is, as you know, as bad as this has been and as big a pounding as I've taken and the ups and downs of it, I can say one thing. I made a good friend. And, you know, no matter how it all turns out, because we're going to fight it to the end, I can always say that. So that's a good thing.
Well,
good guy, man.
No, for sure. Go ahead, Tom.
I was going to say, so I one of the things that I wondered is that I did the dumb Army Ranger thing when I got out and thought that, you know, how I felt it. Yeah, I know, me, dumb Army Ranger, shock. But how I felt at 24 getting out was going to be the way that I felt now at 34, which is not the case. And, you know, I had, you know, surgery, you know, while I was in. And so I, you know, went to request my medical records. First, they said they couldn't find them. They said that they were in sort of like the central processing place. And yesterday, I got a letter back that says, in italics, in that, if we can find them. I mean,
right.
And that blew my mind. Like, is it really not only sort of in the record, but is it really sort of really, truly, systematically that bad, one? And two, I've just never, even with other people I know that I've talked to the VA, I never really felt like I got a great answer for it, is if that is, yes, the case, and it really is that messed up, is it because people just don't, there's a segment of the employees that just don't care, or is it that they're just that overwhelmed?
It's, you know, it's poor leadership. And when I went and testified in front of the Senate, and there was a lot of things, and I've been asked this, and people asked me from the get-go, how would you fix it? And, you know, it's a difficult question because it's so large. But the thing is it's a huge bureaucracy that has just become, you can't hold anybody accountable. And it's become where it's such a good old boy system and cronyism that even, and I said it in my testimony, I told one of the senators, I said, you have two generations of poor leaders, just poor leaders that have been given positions because their buddy was this or, you know, they have letters behind their names that have no clue how to lead. I mean, just basic business and leadership skills, they just have none of them. And, you know, when your morale, I mean, and we're all military guys, morale, people don't understand how big that is. I mean, you know, if you take care of your people, they're going to take care of you. And no matter how bad the situation gets, they are going to take care of you if you treat them right and you prepare them and you lead them. People want to be led. The problem with it in the VA is it's just scared. People are scared to come forward. I get people every day, still to this day, that come forward and thank me for telling the truth. But they won't say anything because that's how bad the intimidation is. And you know, it's just a scare tactic, and that's the leadership that you do. It's become something, the numbers part of it, and don't get me wrong, there's some great providers in there. But I'm going to tell you, a lot of the great providers, like the doctors and stuff that are in the VA, they get so frustrated they leave. They don't have to deal with it. They can go out and make really good money outside of there. And you know, the ones that do just kind of fit in and say, okay, I'm going to come to work and I'm going to do my job and I'm going to see veterans. And the morale's still bad, which we know we've all probably had jobs where we've done that before. You know, you go through the motions and everything. But the numbers, it got to a point, guys, where I would sit in meetings and, you know, I'd look at the numbers and I'm like, how in the world are they doing this? I'd legitimately be trying to make a performance measure. And I couldn't even make ground because I couldn't get the employees to do, you know, I couldn't set up an action plan or something. And, you know, it would be like, how are they doing it? And their numbers would just change dramatically. And I'd be like, what in the world? And then I knew something was up. I mean, it doesn't take long to figure that out. And you know, it had gotten to a point instead of, it was how to manipulate the numbers to say what they want them to say where we can get our bonuses and not worry about treating the veterans that the numbers are supposed to measure we're doing, if that makes any sense. And that's just, I mean, it's really kind of disgusting. So.
Yep.
And you know, man, when you rattle that ship, man, it becomes an interesting ride.
So now you've created this kind of the support group, the truth tellers, and you know, you guys are banding together pretty well because obviously this wasn't an isolated incident. Tragically and sadly, this was not an isolated incident. Have you taken additional heat for being part of this group or like, cause I know like some people feel like the group is like adverse, or adversary, you know, and taking an adversarial role to the VA.
Right. You know, unfortunately what we've learned in all this is the only way to get the VA's attention is its image. They're more worried about their image than they are anything. And that includes taking care of veterans. And, you know, early on in this, I figured out that being isolated, you were just going to get ripped apart. I mean, they had you where they wanted you. And they had done it for so long to so many people. And I started just researching it one day. And, you know, and Ricky and I talked about it, actually. And he said, you know, I said, I think we need to kind of join up, whatever. And so I started researching, and I just started reaching out to just different whistleblowers. I mean, I would Google it, and I would find the reporter or the media person, which I'll be honest with you, the media has really helped out a lot for a lot of us in this, too. And So I started reaching out to them saying, hey, I'm trying to get whistleblowers together, da 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 da. They were very helpful in it. And I think I got like four or five together, and we were just emailing back and forth just to support each other. Because, I mean, it's lonely, man. I mean, they isolate you. They isolate you at work. They just mess with you. They constantly just kind of do little things. You know, they're smart. They know the rules. So they kind of know what they can get away with and can't. And, you know, what's right on the edge and what's not. And so, you know, just started reaching out. And then I ran across Jermaine Clarno, who is a whistleblower in Hines right outside of Chicago. And Dr. Nee, who's a cardiologist that came forward. And, you know, they had a little group, about four or five, and they had the same idea. So basically, man, it just kind of came together. It's not even been a year. I think June would be a year when we actually even started. But we just were emailing back and forth just to support each other and give each other, you know, a pat on the back and encourage us when, you know, things were happening. And finally, what we noticed, back to the IG again, is the IG were just doing shoddy investigations, and they weren't really investigating what they were supposed to, and they were coming after us. They were coming into the facilities and with one intention, and that was to scare us and shut us up. And we started seeing it. When we started communicating within that little group, we started seeing it more, and then they attacked a couple of the whistleblowers, the IG did, in their reports. And we finally said, you know, Jermaine and I said, you know what, this is enough. We're not going to let this happen. And we put out a thing to the, we were talking to the USA Today, it was Gannett, and we told them, we had enough of it. This is ridiculous. They're coming after us. They're smearing whistleblowers, you know, in reports. And, you know, the head of the IG needs to go. They need to be exposed. And we just kind of fell into some things, man. I mean, we wrote a letter to the president. We got it into the president. We got it, you know, there, and the IG stepped down. And it was just, that week was something pretty special, man. We just kind of fell into a lot of things. Made a lot of mistakes. Just fell into a lot of things because there's no book out there. I mean, there's books on whistleblowing, which is interesting because Tom Devine wrote a few of them, and now he ends up he's helping Ricky and I with my case with GAP. And, you know, you just kind of learn and go, and what we've tried to do is build the truth tellers up to where, you know, we can actually give advice to whistleblowers and what to do and you know, mistakes, and give them options, because a lot of times you just don't know your options. Because the bottom line, it's going to come down to what you choose to do. It's a big step going to the media, because once you start hammering them in the media, they're going to come after you with everything they've got. So, and you know, it's like I told the IG. I mean, I'm an old school Army guy, man. They came in and it was like I said, hold on a minute, you're investigating me? These questions aren't adding up. And they were like, well, you know, this and that. And I told them, I said, whatever, you know. I'm not talking to you anymore. So, but that was a big fight. But, you know, a lot of people, and they scared off people, man. When they do that, they scared a lot of people off. So.
Yeah, I mean, I can only imagine. And, you know, like, I really enjoyed how you just spoke about how, like, the media had helped you a little bit. I mean,
Yeah. Everyone's
really kind of latched on. Obviously, you know, Phoenix is, like, the epicenter even of the media attention when it comes to the VA. And, you know, it's sad because, you know, this is a systemic problem versus like a localized or regional problem.
And, right. It's throughout,
you know,
and it's all over.
And I think, you know, one of the biggest frustrations, you know, is that, you know, when people get caught and there doesn't seem to be any punishment. I mean, people are put on administrative leave. They still maintain their salaries. They're getting, you know, bonuses, and how you get a bonus while you're on administrative leave, you know, like, I don't understand that, you know, like, it definitely doesn't meet the criteria. So it's like people are still looking out for each other at that level, and it's just sad. But man,
it's a good old boy system.
Yeah, or a good old girl in Phoenix.
Good old girl. I mean, it's you know, being in the federal government, and we've all been there, you see little things like this and that, like, hey, you know, you got to spend, it's almost the end of the year. Let's don't want to have any money left in your budget, you're not going to get it. Those are small things compared to what's going on here. I mean, these are like, you know, there's some things going on with contracting and things like that, hiring. I mean, you know, the VA, and I even said this to Senator Johnson at the hearing. I told him, I said, the VA Public Affairs puts out more propaganda than the Republic of North Korea. I said, you can't believe anything that comes out of there, man.
Yeah. I actually just read an article of, you know, how they were talking about, like, the Reformation Committee, the VA, you know, Reform Committee. And they're like, someone on the committee is, like, spreading, like, pro-VA propaganda. And you know, it's like, yeah, no, like, they are. But
oh, it's
yeah,
amazing,
yeah.
Man. It's absolutely amazing. Senator Johnson laughed when I said that at a meeting. I said, but it's true. I said, you know, the numbers, they still use these numbers. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Nobody believes these. You're still manipulating it. The thing with accountability is, and we've said this from the get-go, the thing with accountability is they hold people accountable. They'll hold me accountable. They'll hold somebody else accountable. But, you know, when it comes to for little stupid things, you know, they'll find anything and everything to get you on when you come forward as a whistleblower. But, you know, if it's something major or if it's someone in the leadership or, man, it's just they don't even hold them accountable. And if it gets to a bad where they've done something really bad and they have to do something, they'll just move them to another facility.
Well, that's the federal way, right? That's,
yeah.
You know, if you screw up, get promoted. But, hey, Shay, we gotta wrap you up here pretty quick. Is there anything that we can tell our audience to do in form of a call of action to support you all in your efforts to help spread the story? I know you guys are on Facebook. Anywhere else you guys are located or anything we can do, take a little bit of time to tell the audience how they can follow you all and support you all and make sure that, you know, fairness and justice prevails.
Yeah, we have our VA Truth Tellers on Facebook, and we have a Twitter account. And, you know, right now we're in the process of getting our 501c3 and getting that done so we can, you know, build on what we're doing. We never imagined a year ago that we would have grown like we have. The main thing is just tell the truth, man. Just, if you know people are veterans that are having difficulties with it, if you know if they're having issues, just tell the truth and come forward. And you know, to get this where it needs to be, it's going to take everybody working together. I mean, it's going to take veterans. It's going to take the American taxpayers. It's going to take us whistleblowers. I mean, it's just, you know, and to hold, just make them accountable. I mean, it's everybody's taxpayers' money that's going to this. And, you know, and that's what we want to provide, nothing less than the absolute world's best care to veterans. And, you know, it's just that's what they deserve, and that's what we're going to continue to fight until we can get that.
Awesome.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time tonight, Shay. You know, really, you guys are doing a bang-up job, and short of, you know, the short of getting a secretary, you know, to do an episode of Undercover Boss, I don't see, you know, much happening without the efforts of what y'all are doing. So, the guys and I here at the show, we applaud you. We thank you, one, for your service that you did prior to this, and we're thanking you for your continued service. But Shay Wilkes, everybody, thanks for coming on, and we will be sure at the end of the show to refresh everybody on when they can track you out. Thanks for coming on.
All right. Hey, man, I appreciate it anytime, and if there's anything I could do or y'all ever have any questions about, just let me know, man.
Oh, for sure.
Thank you very much, brother.
We'll have you back on.
All right, man, thanks. War Eagle.
And he left with a little war eagle. That reminds me of my time on the infantry training brigade. And Colonel, man, was Abrams, big hands. And he gave the craziest salute, war eagle. We did the war eagle run, a flash pass. But, hey, we're going to take a few moments, and we're going to go, you know, listen to some music. We got a great American patriotic band singing a song that's very timely for today. So without further ado, here's Saving Abel, Miss America.
Friends are dying, and I just wanna come home. The stars are under a different sky. Your prayers must be working, cause I'm still alive. This place is so cold, and I just wanna come home. I'm fighting, I'm bleeding. I know what's coming, but I'm still breathing.
Coming in about what's going on, and you're like, holy smokes, man. Like,
yeah,
here we go.
You know, it's one of those things that's fun, because I got up this morning, you know, you fall in that late night school philosophy. I'm the guy that gets up super early in the morning, and, you know, I thought it was so funny. You know, you and I were talking and texting and calling back and forth last night, trying to plan the show a little bit, and, like, literally, it's, you know, 5 o'clock in the morning. I haven't even had my first cup of coffee. I'm letting the dog out. And I look down at my phone and I'm just scrolling through everything. And it's like a pack in Brussels. And I'm like, God, are you kidding me? it's one of those things that it opens it up from one of those. I want my heart goes out to everyone in Belgium right now. You know, all the people that are there. You know, for all the grief that we give, you know, the people in Europe or our European allies, or we think that there's differences in their ways of life. Ultimately, we're remarkably similar, and to see an airport and a train station just get decimated, and to be watching the news and hear that the sound off that video of that little child just screaming over and over and over again, and you're just like.
Yeah.
It's one of those, I feel like we're in a bad movie or something where we just keep getting stuck over and over again in this same situation. It's insane.
Yeah, no, like I was going to comment on the child screaming, and you know, because as a father, not, you know, like, there's a few sounds that you become numb to in life, you know, as a combat veteran.
Mm-hmm.
There's some sounds like I don't think you ever become numb to, and that's a child. And that, you know,
right.
I don't think that as a combat veteran, I think that's as a father. And it's just like you hear a child, you're like, you know, immediately you're trying to figure out how you can solve that problem. You know, how can you like
mm-hmm.
help that? And, you know, it's just heart-wrenching. And, you know, I really enjoyed what you just said about, well, you know, we speak different languages, we eat different foods, and, you know, our musical tastes, you know, differ from metal to discotheque. You know, we are inherently the same as we are humans. You know, we're freedom-loving humans, and that's why, you know, they were attacked. You know, there was a vulnerability, and the enemy seized an opportunity to attack a vulnerability and to project fear and terror, you know.
Mm-hmm.
This wasn't an act to gain terrain. This wasn't an act to gain, you know, like a valuable asset. This was an attack designed to inflict the greatest level of terror that it can. And, we, as war fighters, we look at it as a cowardly act, as you're like, you know, if you were a real man, you'd come and fight us. But they know that they don't have to, you know, they're
mm-hmm.
far more, you know, far more effective when they don't fight us. You know, like, they stand toe to toe, they die. But, you know, like, I'm not complimenting them, so I don't want my words to be misunderstood, but this was successful on their end. Like,
yes,
you know, they got W's, and they're racking W's up. They racked W's up in Paris. They rack W's up
mm-hmm.
in Indonesia. They're racking W's up in Brussels right now.
Turkey.
And the sad
Turkey was 6 hours before.
Yeah, you know, they're just putting them up in the column. And the sad part is, like, you know, we have a lot of, I don't want to use the word fear-mongering in America, but what we have is, you know, with what's happened here recently, you know, with Boston and then out in California, you know, in San Bernardino, we've really, like, heightened our alertness. It was already extremely heightened due to 9/11. But now, like, we're doubling down. You know, we've have agencies that have task force that are crazily employed, tracking as much as they possibly can. You know, we're listening, you know, to people's cell phones. We're doing everything that we can to be proactive and diligent.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, part of that is because, like, we know, we've tasted the consequence, you know, and when I saw the pictures of the guys pushing the luggage carts with the devices, you know, I was like, man, that just reminded me of the guys carrying the backpacks in Boston. It was almost like the same
mm-hmm.
image in my head. It was like, man, so, like, you know, we're learning from this, but one of the sad things is, like, Belgium's one of the countries that, due to, you know, obviously geographic location, they've taken in a lot of refugees. They've taken in a lot of not just refugees but migrants. you know, because it's, you know, a land, it's, you know, a land travel. And they have areas that are these, like, no-go zones. And out of some of these no-go zones, which, you know, for our listening audience, you know, that's these areas to which, you know, the authorities tend to let them be self-governed and self-policing. If you watched The Wire back in the day, you know, like, they created a no-go zone in The Wire. But, like, all kidding aside, like, that's extremely dangerous. And that's where these, you know, they can directly attribute Paris and Brussels to these no-go zones. And in fact, to the same one.
Yep.
And, like, that is, like, one of the things when people are like, oh, you know, you guys are, like, you know, Islamophobic. Like, I'm not Islamophobic. I fought for my Muslims. They were war fighters. You know, like, I was proud to fight with them.
Yeah, the purse is bad, dude. First murder is going to shoot you just as soon as anybody else is. Man, if you don't know, you better ask somebody about those guys.
There's, like, and that's exactly who I'm talking about. And, you know, it's just, like, you can't turn a blind eye. You know, you can't.
Yes.
You know, in my church, we have a saying, you know, believe the best. And, you know, like, I believe the best in almost every situation in life. And when someone cuts me off on the road, like, I believe the best that they need to get there before I do. And, like, I, like, don't get angry at them and, like, try my F-150 with my, you know, my big grill guard on it, like, up their back end. No, I believe the best that wherever it is that they got to get in front of me, they really have a purpose for it and God has a plan for it. So I don't. But when it comes to this other stuff, I can't believe the best. Like, I can't believe that you can allow this stuff to happen.
So, I land down, and just so the listening audience knows, in addition to having a couple of combat tours when I was active duty with the Ranger Regiment, I went and got my degree in political science with a focus on the Middle East from the University of Illinois. So I've done it as a warfighter, and then I had to do it for a degree, which Lord knows why I thought that was a good use of my time. But, you know, in at least in that specific field of study, but it's like I've seen it on the academic level too. And to me, the problem breaks down is exactly what you said. It's like when you start reducing your baseline social service, you know, in the case of law enforcement and services and things like that, when you start allowing a self-governance or, you know, an area where law and order doesn't mean the same for one group of people than the other, that's not a religion problem. That's a – and I'm not blaming the French. I'm not blaming, you know, the Belgians. I'm not – what I'm – because the truth of the matter is it goes on in the United States. You want to be really clear about that. Like, there are places in the inner city where the cops just don't go and they just let the gangbangers shoot each other because – it's easier and it leads to, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's kind of a free-for-all zone. Like, it breaks down there. But the other thing, too, and I think the world is finally starting to understand this, is something that was actually published in the National Review today. And that is that one of the lines in the article talking about how this, what we are seeing is jihad. And I thought this line was so perfect. He says, jihad is an internal, all-encompassing, unholy war against the unbeliever. Like, you have a very, very small group of people that do not speak ultimately for – not ultimately. They do not speak for the majority of Muslims. Like, if you've never – if you're like, oh, this is a Muslim thing, and you've never met the Kurds up in Iraq, or you've never met some of the Persian freedom fighters who made their way over to Afghanistan, like, nothing personal, you know, my friends, but you don't know what you're talking about. Like, those are some bad mama jammas that are absolutely on the right side of the law I will do business with 24/7, 365, including the 366 when it's a leap year like it was this year. Like, those are some bad mofos. It's not about the religion. It's about what happens when a religion is perverted and somebody, you know, takes it and uses it for their purposes and convinces an uneducated, unresourced kid, you know, to go do dumb stuff. Like, these are suicide bombers. And what? The other thing that I don't think most people know, and it bothers me, and Toby, you know, I've had this conversation offline, not on air, but it's like people don't realize that as best as the lessons learned warfare center and the Army and the Marine Corps can figure out, roughly two-thirds of all quote-unquote suicide bombers are remote detonated. So, like, the person has that, maybe I really don't want to die for this, and some dude in the background is like, durka, 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 too late, click. You know, like, it's such an issue, and, you know, I don't know if that happened this time, or I don't know if these were, you know, the supposedly the true believers, and, you know, but it's like, you're right, they're getting on the scoreboard, and they're getting on the scoreboard because at the end of the day, their resolve and their conviction does not have to conform to the notion of a greater good. They really believe, and it's one of the things that the academics and the warfighters both agree on, that they are not stopping until you force them to stop. Like, that's it. Like, it's one of the few times that academia and military science agree, and it's like, they're not, you know, academia will tell you, oh, well, we need social services, and we need aid, and we need to be more tolerant, and people like you and I are like, yo, we just need to shoot them, you know? But, like, it's not going away, and it scares me, and it really concerns me that I don't think people fully understand that.
Yeah, no, it's the, the intricacies of how, like, this all goes down, like, again, you know, I don't want to say the words in a complimentary way, but, you know, like, they are achieving what they're setting out to do. You know, maybe they're not getting the numbers that they'd like, but they are getting numbers. ISIS,
tactically, it's brilliant.
But,
and that's,
yeah,
that's,
I mean,
not complimentary.
Really,
that's
worked.
Just... Yeah, it's
yeah.
just that's a military
no, it's
commander
reality.
Putting their
yeah.
And what worries me?
Like, yeah, one of the other things is like that. You know, I read this quick little paper, and then I went and, you know, kind of, I don't want to use the word vetted, but I really wanted to, like, kind of fact check it and check it out. But
mm-hmm.
you know, I read this quick little paper about their recruitment videos. You know, and obviously, like, one of the things that when we watch their recruitment videos, you know, we see the gore, we see, you know, the travesty of, you know, the violence and how it's inflicted on
mm-hmm.
people. And we're like, oh, man, this is horrible. And we focus on that. But, like, this paper was kind of like, you know, they're reaching and they're so successful at reaching their target demographic because of their brilliant approach to it. And, you know, and it was really about, like, look at Western culture video games and look at their mm-hmm. recruitment video. And so it's like they're making their recruitment videos like a first-person shooter game, like
yep.
coming out of the truck, shooting someone on the drive, you know, walking by, pulling up on a vehicle, shooting into the vehicle. You know, they're doing these different things, and they're appealing, even whether we realize it or not, like they're appealing extremely well to, like, this vulnerable age group. You know, when you and I
were
in the vulnerable age group was the young white bald dude that was the neo-Nazis were, like, taking advantage of, right? And, you know, influencing
yep.
them and trying to indoctrinate them into hate, as well as, you know, the young mm-hmm. gangs, you know, in the inner cities were taking guys and, like, indoctrinating them into hate on the opposite side of the coin. But, you know, they're doing this extremely successfully, and, you know, it's, on one hand, I imagine our leadership, and when I say our leadership, I mean our military leadership, are probably extremely frustrated because, like, and they're extremely handcuffed, they're handicapped.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the U.S. Army, the U.S. Navy, while they have amazing, like, marketing firms behind them, they can't unleash, you know, that kind of, you know, tactic on the public and on the enemy. You know, they can't do that, and it's like, man, they're like, part of me is like, man, these sons of bitches are, like, they're beating us
so,
at some of our own games.
You
know,
the other thing, you mentioned that the kids and the impressionable ages and everything like that. And so one of the companies that I'm working with right now and something that I would really love to find a way to ultimately make it my, like, my full-time job, I would do it in a heartbeat, is it's a startup that the CEO is a former SF guy. He retired as a sergeant major out of special ops. And it's a company, it's a healthcare company that is trying to bring a software suite and communication to the government in the third world, in places like Kurdistan, actually, in Kenya, all over the world. And it's one of those things, and what I'm helping the organization with is sort of communication of, you know, on a various and variety of levels. But the thing that you don't realize is that, so you and I take, all of us who are listening probably, take our cell phones or our smartphones for granted. Because when we were 7 or 8 years old, we were playing on, you know, Max's elementary school, you know, or certainly by junior high, we were all PC indoctrinated. It's only been in the past 5 or 6 years that a total of 7% of the population of 36 million people in Kenya got a smartphone. Like 80% of the population has some sort of plus phone feature that basically they can text message each other. And so what you're seeing in the third world, what you're seeing in Syria, in Lebanon, in, you know, to a lesser extent, Jordan, that's relatively robust. But, you know, in Afghanistan, in just the shattered, you know, remnants of Iraq, is you're seeing these kids who have just a little bit of technology in a phone that have known nothing else, are being influenced by someone they meet with ISIS and all these, and they're super slick. Their production value is insane, like you talked about. Their PR and their social media savvy and everything, it is so insane and it's so slick, and they are literally overwhelming these kids who have nothing. And it's like, on some levels with ISIS, I don't believe, especially with this work that I've been doing over the past couple of months, sort of researching third world communication flows and how to reach people and how to try and help solve their healthcare problems and help them. I think that the religion is sort of like a very loose glue to the organization, but what they're attracting are kids that have had nothing and they're seeing something. And that's what's the scariest thing to me of all, is because if they've truly created a dynamic of we will make you a have instead of a have not, they're never going to stop getting people unless we can crush the leadership.
Yeah. No, it's the old, you gotta cut the head off the snake. That's for sure. Hey, we're getting low on time, my man. We're about 2.5 minutes out from them cutting the Airstream from us, but lots going on. I know, it's like sad. We didn't even get to talk about how, like, a crazy college kid from America is going to do 15 years of hard time for doing what almost every person that stays in a hotel in America does, and that's steal something.
I know. I wish we could have gotten to
Don't take the towels, you know. Like, I learned a valuable lesson about taking something from a hotel in Vegas one time. It was a pack of nuts, and the nuts cost me like $50. But, no, like, he took a propaganda sign / leaflet, and it's costing him 15 years of hard labor. But, man, it's been great to have you on the air, man. Like, so,
hey, brother, it was a great time.
Hey, so where all can we follow you? I know you're on Twitter, so tell us where we, you know, where we can get caught up on Athena Pictures. You know, that's crucial to you.
If you want to sort of see what I'm doing, the best way right now is either Instagram or Twitter. You can find me on Instagram at Tommy Amenta, and then on Twitter right now it's at Tom C Amenta, because someone took Tommy Amenta, so I'm actually in the process of negotiating back to get that Twitter handle. So, you know, so that's where you can find me. You'll find pictures of my dog, really good bourbon. The sort of the projects that I'm working on, you're going to start sort of seeing that, especially the, you know, working with another SF special ops guy to try and solve third world healthcare problems. So that's what I'm doing right now, and also trying to help Ricky and make a push for some new leadership. So fingers crossed that both those go well.
Yeah, no, we're super excited about all that stuff, especially the campaign that we're closely following there in the 4th Louisiana Congressional District. But, Tom, man, thanks for coming on the show. I appreciate you stepping in for our bald brother. You know, it's always a pleasure. Excited for this new chapter for you, and we look forward to seeing you when you're touring with the movie.
Cool, man. Well, we will be around, and anytime you guys want me to either be on or if I ever need fill in for Stu, I'm always there for you, my man.
We appreciate it. Well, thanks, everyone, for tuning in tonight. Thanks for Shay for joining us, and We'll catch you all next week with another special guest. Good night, everybody.